Chapter 23. Almost from the beginning of the next subtle campaign of pre-preparation of mankind for its participation in their coming project, Jan Roderick had been aware of the game, even if he couldn't have put into words what he was perceiving. Even if he wasn't aware, he was aware, Sister Colleen thought. Now there were even more stories, tall or otherwise, a flood of them. Eventually, Sister Colleen would learn that they all contributed to the memeplex clustering around the invitation. Stories passed from mouth to mouth among the fissured human communities of the Long Earth, and eagerly scrutinized by Jan when he found them. Stories such as, Sister Colleen saw, reading over his shoulder, the tale of the man who became known as Johnny Shakespeare, supposedly dating from about 20 years after Step Day. Mr. Clifford Driscoll, born in Datum, Massachusetts, was a teacher of English. His particular passion had always been for Shakespeare, and he made no apologies for that. To the benefit of those of his students who were capable of listening and willing to learn, that passion fueled an anxious, intense, but compelling teaching style, and an often very successful one. In those pre-Yellowstone days, his early career had been conducted in small public high schools in his native Datum, Massachusetts. Here, and unlike on the new worlds of the Long Earth, Shakespeare, along with all of the Datum civilization's cultural heritage, was at least available to Mr. Driscoll's students, accessible at the touch of a keypad, a whisper into a phone. But he came to feel his students' attention had been constantly diverted from their studies by their technological toys, by the endless roaring background noise of the Datum's high-tech, crowded culture, as well as by the timeless distractions of each other's developing young bodies. And Mr. Driscoll himself grew increasingly restless. In his 50s, a bachelor, celibate for more than 20 years, and approaching the last stretch of his career before retirement, Mr. Driscoll formulated a new goal. He must go where he was needed, where he might be useful. It was with a kind of missionary spirit that he found a teaching post in a school in what he thought of as one of the colony worlds, West 3, in a small stepwise Massachusetts town with a booming population and an economy dominated by lumbering. For Mr. Driscoll at first, this was a romantic place to work, an island of human endeavour carved into the great silence of a global forest. And the colony's fast growth rate, some years after Step Day, provided him with classrooms pleasingly crowded with students. But there were problems. Even as early as the 2030s, the America of West 3 was no primitive culture. The larger towns already had connectivity through fibre optic cables, TV, phones. It was not yet saturated with technology. Here the students found less to distract them. But that did not make room for English literature in their heads. It did not make room for Shakespeare. And these young people were destined for lives working in lumber yards. The Datum and its millennia of culture seemed a glittering and remote abstraction. What use literature to them? What use Shakespeare in such a world? That question gained still more profound significance in Mr. Driscoll's mind as he learned more of the Long Earth into which he had taken a few tentative steps. He made an ally of Chet Wilson, a hobbyist engineer who ran hugely popular hands-on technology classes in the school's extensive workshops. Wilson, from rural Massachusetts in the Datum, cared only for his gadgetry. He was a man out of his time. He would have looked at home under the bonnet of a Model T Ford, Mr. Driscoll thought, and if he could have got away with whittling all day, he might have done just that. A character as unlike Mr. Driscoll's earnest culturedness would be hard to find. Yet they found common ground in their passion for their subjects and a desire to teach. One day, Mr. Driscoll idly asked Wilson how far out the wave of human colonization had spread across the Long Earth. Chet Wilson sucked his teeth and said, "Let me give it some thought." After an interval, Wilson said, "Nobody knows is the truth. I do know there's a big belt of farmed worlds that start out beyond 100,000. Did you say 100,000? Mr. Driscoll was already out of his depth. Not all the Earths in between are going to be populated. Not yet. But you know how people breed when they get the chance. Mr. Driscoll was appalled. All those Earths. All those children. Those young minds. Who will know only logging and farming and digging for iron ore? Or just wandering around picking fruit? And their children will grow up knowing less still. What will become of our civilization's heritage after a few generations, Wilson? Tell me that. It will be as if thousands of years of struggle to learn and remember were just a dream. I must think about this. Muttering to himself, he wandered off. Wilson, calm, said nothing. 24 hours later, Mr. Driscoll returned to the workshop, bubbling with enthusiasm. I have it, Wilson! I have it! Wilson eyed him and moved a bit further away. Shakespeare! That's the answer. What represents the crown of our civilization? Shakespeare and his works! And how can a human world ever be called civilized if it does not know Shakespeare? That is to be my mission now, Wilson. I have already handed in my notice at the high school. I will not linger here, wasting my remaining years before handfuls of indifferent students. Instead, I will take Shakespeare to the long earth, and thus I will shape rude minds. The play's the thing wherein I'll catch the conscience of the king. Conscience, yes, that's it. I will give the long earth its conscience. How? How what? How are you gonna take Shakespeare stepwise? Well, I haven't worked it all out, not yet, blustered Mr. Driscoll. I can go out there and speak of the bard. Won't do much good if they can't read it. That's true, that's true. A travelling show, perhaps, to stage the great works. No, no. Too complicated a process, and I am no impresario. Suddenly he shot to his feet. Ah! I have it! I will carry copies of the complete works in some compact edition. Paper, of course. One cannot rely on electronics in the true frontier worlds, I am sure. One edition per town, to be copied and disseminated. But even that, given so many Earths, one per world, then. A symbolic act, which may inspire others to emulate my donation and spread the word of the bard laterally, so to speak. Gonna need a stage name. A what? So everybody hears about what you're up to. Something memorable. Ah, I see. Like a secret identity. The Wandering Minstrel, perhaps. Chet Wilson sucked his teeth and said, Let me give it some thought. After an interval, Wilson said, Johnny Shakespeare. But my name's not John. I'm afraid I don't see. Like Johnny Appleseed. With him, apples. With you, Shakespeare. Yes. Wilson, you're a genius. One world at a time, like Appleseed wandering across the Old West. I will plant the seed of Shakespeare to flourish on each new earth, and thus will the great tree of our civilization grow, as far as man has traveled, or at least as far as I myself can step. I must announce this straight away, and I will order a box of books from a datum publisher and make a start. Gonna need a big box. What do you mean? Well, now, there's said to be people scattered over the worlds out to Earth West 1 million and beyond. If just 0.1% of those worlds is settled, you're going to need 1,000 books. How far you reckon you could carry 1,000 books? Well, Mr. Driscoll had never been a particularly practical man. Now he saw his scheme collapsing before it had started. He sat down, helpless. What am I to do, Wilson? Chet Wilson sucked his teeth and said, Let me give it some thought. The next day, Wilson called Mr. Driscoll back to his workshop. Now, this here is only a prototype. It's going to need some tinkering, but I reckon it'll do the job. The thing on Wilson's workbench struck Mr. Driscoll at first as a kind of grotesque crab. It was a book, a complete edition of Shakespeare, but it stood on a set of spindly legs, just a few inches off the bench, and Mr. Driscoll glimpsed miniature manipulators of some kind, dangling from the underside. "Wilson, what is this? You ever heard of matterprinters, Driscoll?" Wilson's solution to Mr. Driscoll's dilemma was simple in principle, and given a reasonably mature matterprinter industry, straightforward in practice. This was a complete edition of Shakespeare that was capable of reproducing itself. "So you come to some new world, you set this little guy down on the floor of the forest and let him go to work, while you light up your pipe and sit back. Well, I don't smoke, Wilson. Smoking's optional. Here's the thing." Wilson mimed scuttling legs with his fingers. "He rushes over to some tree. A fallen trunk will do, even a sapling. And he starts to chew up the wood into pulp to make paper. And then he finds gall and such to make ink. And then, page by page..." Mr. Driscoll saw it. "Out pops Shakespeare." "The same. It'll take him a day or so to spit out his copy." Wilson struck Mr. Driscoll as the kind of man who, working in a high school, had probably had to train himself to use phrases like spit out, as opposed to less salubrious alternatives. "All nicely bound and everything. There's a master copy on his back here. He has a crawling laser reader to scan the text to check there's no error creeping in. And there I am, a day later, with a brand new Shakespeare to hand over to a hungry young civilization. Marvelous, Wilson! Marvelous!" Wilson droned on some more about how the printer was capable of limited self-repair and maintenance, again using components derived from wood. "With a little nanotech, you can make almost anything from carbon, even diamond, to fix the laser scanner, or build itself a new one." And he went on about how as long as the printer didn't drift from its programming, there would be no problem. Mr. Driscoll was no longer listening. He was already dreaming of the speech he would make to announce his new venture to the world. As soon as he had assembled his travelling kit, Mr. Driscoll went back to the Datum and made his way to Broken Straw Creek, south of Warren, Pennsylvania, where the original Johnny Appleseed, whose real name had been John Chapman, born the best part of 3 centuries earlier, had planted his first nursery. There, Mr. Driscoll set up a tablet on a wall to record the moment for posterity, as alone, with his matter printer Shakespeare at his side, he declaimed his intention to carry the bard to the new worlds. "To older generations, this technology would have seemed strange indeed, but today, in a marriage of the supreme achievement of the arts and sciences of the Datum Earth, it will inspire young minds and nurture civilization across the new Earths. It is just as in Shakespeare's time. The Bard's London was a world city, at the heart of an emerging global culture, and through his plays, Shakespeare brought that new world to his audiences. And now in this newly emerging panorama of many Earths, I..." "Oh, excuse me." The recording had to be abandoned, because the matter printer was nibbling at his chair leg, seeking wood to pulp. And then, with a twist of the control of his stepper box, Mr. Driscoll set off. At first, all went well. Mr. Driscoll soon shook off his inexperience and became a seasoned long-earth traveller, his breath deepening, his legs strengthening, his feet hardening, even his stomach becoming used to the stepping nausea. He didn't stop at every world. He decided to go as far into the long earth as he could manage, scattering his literary seed here and there, and relying on time and Shakespeare himself to take care of a wider diffusion. When he did stop, it would be for a few days. He would send his matter printer master edition off to the forest to spawn, and wait for the new copy of the works to be produced. Sometimes he would camp out. Other times he would introduce himself locally, and perhaps stop to deliver a talk, a reading of the bard, teach a class or two. Then, with the gleaming new complete Shakespeare delivered, he'd be sent on his way, generally with gratitude and a pack full of food and a bottle of fresh squeezed lemonade. Word began to spread ahead of his arrival. In some worlds, he would be greeted by farmers or their children and offered a ride to the nearest township. In 3 years, he covered hundreds of worlds in this way. He felt a vast and deepening satisfaction at the success of his project. Then he came to Earth West 31,415 in the far ice belt. He released his master printer and, after his usual refreshing night's sleep in a forest glade, went to retrieve this world's brand new copy of the Bard. He soon found the master copy, dormant as usual, in a pose that Mr. Driscoll, no engineer, always interpreted as resting after a hard night's work. And beside it was, not another reading copy with pages still moist, the gall-based ink printing bright, another master copy, another crab-like gadget, a copy of the book on a series of spindly legs. Puzzled, he reached for the new copy, but it scuttled off out of his reach and out of sight. Mr. Driscoll was more irritated than alarmed. He was not a practical man, and was used to machinery of all kinds letting him down. He set the true master copy off on its way to another part of the forest. Perhaps there was something peculiar about the trees just here, he wondered, not very scientifically, and waited another night. The next morning there was a fresh reading copy of Shakespeare, sitting there on a pile of leaves, just as specified. Mr. Driscoll picked it up, took it into the nearest town, and spent a pleasant day talking to some vaguely interested farmers' children in their quaint little school. To Mr. Driscoll's taste, this was a particularly pleasing community, who, Amish-like, had decided to eschew modern technology as much as possible when shaping their new world. And the next morning, Mr. Driscoll stepped on, thinking no more of Earth West 31,415. Until 10 days later, an agitated farmer pursued him stepwise and demanded that he come back. When he returned to 31,415, he was taken to the forest glade where he had released the master Shakespeare, only to find the glade had vanished. It was as if a whole bunch of trees had uprooted themselves. "Hmm," said Mr. Driscoll, baffled. "Fear not, till Birnam Wood do come to Dunsinane." "What? What? Look at this, man, look what you've done." The farmer dragged Mr. Driscoll deeper into the forest, and now Mr. Driscoll saw that the patch of cleared ground was not empty, but filled with crab-like creations that crawled and rustled and clambered up the trunks of the surrounding trees, pages on their backs stirring like ladybird wings. They were Shakespeare's, not readers' copies like the ones he was leaving behind on the worlds he passed through, but more masters, matter printers making replicas of themselves. And those copies were making copies in turn, spreading out through the forest. "What are you going to do about this?" cried the farmer. "Me? What can I do? We've already lost about a ton of lumber, we reckon, in 10 days, and it's spreading faster all the time." He grabbed Mr. Driscoll by the lapels. "You know what you've done, don't you? We came all this way to escape this modern technology bullshit. Now you come here with your stupid books, and you've unleashed a nanotech disaster on us. A grey goo. Well, it's all your fault, Beckerwood. What are you going to do about it, eh?" There was only one thing he could do. "I will get back to the Low Earths as fast as a twain will take me. And then? And then I'll ask Wilson." "A ton of lumber in 10 days, eh?" Chet Wilson sucked his teeth and said, "Let me give it some thought." After an interval, Wilson said, "What you got, you see, is a mutation." "A mutation? The master Shakespeare was always capable of doing more than just churn out the pages of the book." "Well, I told you as much. It could create spare parts for itself, even for the replicating mechanism, designed to recover from drastic damage. That backup process has just gone a little too far, that's all." "A little too far? Are you mad, Wilson? Now it's not just fixing itself, it's making a whole new copy. Don't blame me. Probably the way you operated it. Me? You should have just turned it off and on again. That usually works. The original master evidently reset itself and recovered, but the little rogue baby it produced... He chuckled indulgently. What a rascal. But I refuse to accept any responsibility for this mess. And even so, I don't see how a 2-pound book could have churned up a ton of lumber in just 10 days. Ah, well, that's exponential growth for you. Breeding like rabbits once they get started, see? In the first day, 1 becomes 2. In the second, 2 become 4. In the third, 4 become 8. Yes, yes. After 10 days, you've got 1,000 copies plus change. And 1,000 copies of a 2-pound book is a ton, my friend. That's where your lumber went. Well, it isn't my lumber. Mr. Driscoll's non-mathematical mind tried to grasp these concepts. But if I understand you right, on the 11th day, 1 ton will become 2, and then 2 will become 4, and then that's the idea. Where will it end, Wilson? Where will it end? And what should I do? Exit pursued by a bear, said Wilson. The following few weeks were a sensation, at least for the inhabitants of Earth West 31415, and for the datum federal government agencies called in to help. The colonists were hastily, resentfully evacuated, as after 20 days, 1,000-ton lumber forest had been demolished. After 30 days, 1,000,000 tons of trees had been chewed up, leaving a scar visible from space. And after 40 days, 1,000,000,000 tons had gone, and the continent's surviving animals were fleeing the rising Shakespearean sea. Just 50 days after Mr. Driscoll had released his original master copy, almost every tree on Earth West 31415, indeed the bulk of the planet's continental biomass, had been converted. The books of the Bard roamed the devastated plains, hungry for more. Mr. Driscoll called Wilson from the penitentiary where he was awaiting trial. It's terrible, Wilson. They say the books are mutating again, eating other kinds of vegetable matter, grasses, shrubs. At the ocean shore, some are venturing into the water, devouring the seaweed. In the interior, some of them are turning on each other. Bard eat bard, and they blame me. Blow, blow, thou winter wind, thou art not so unkind as man's ingratitude. Well, the government has declared a quarantine, and is thinking of sending in some kind of clean-up operation. Good idea. Gonna need a code word for that. Chet Wilson sucked his teeth and said, Let me give it some thought. After an interval, Wilson said, How about the taming of the goo? What do you think of that, Driscoll? Driscoll? Discovering such stories only made Jan Roderick determined to root out more, and Sister Colleen grew increasingly anxious about him.